Okay, I'd like to call the May 9th Legislative Committee meeting to order and first confirm that we have a quorum. Good. Oh, that's great. Oh, good thing I have a filter. Okay, consent calendar consists of items 2A and 2B.
Move for adoption.
Moved by McKenzie. Seconded by Hallstatt. Any objection to the motion? Motion passes without objection. Item 3. Hi, Randy.
And Rebecca. Chair Haggerty, how are you today?
I'm living the dream.
How was bike to work day? I heard it was a...
It was great.
Was it good?
It was grand.
Stop.
So this next
nobody
time...
got killed.
That's the key thing.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things. There's a lot of big issues going on the legislative front right now. One of the big ones in Washington, D.C., we're going to get to later. There's actually a couple. But probably the most important one is happening in Sacramento, and it has to do with Senator Steinberg's proposal on cap and trade. And there's a memo in your packet about this. I think the best way to characterize this is probably the single largest transit funding opportunity that we have seen in a great long time. Clearly, since Schwarzenegger's Prop 1B, which was all capital money, and this could be a little bit of operating and capital coming from the state of California. This is a proposal. It's essentially in the form of a press conference and a fact sheet that was put out by Senator Steinberg. We still don't have anything more than that. I mean, we know there's a lot of conversations in Sacramento about whether or not his fellow colleagues in the Senate support this idea or not. I'm going to walk through it in the detail that we have and try to give you some context about the scale of it. As far as your memo goes, I just want to draw your attention to the percentages. There's 40% of these funds would go to affordable housing and sustainable communities, 30% for public transit, both operating and capital, 20% for high-speed rail, and 10% for complete streets and other highway system improvements. Those percentages would be off of a number. Now, we don't know exactly what that number is, but let's just assume it's a low number of $2.6 billion annually of cap-and-trade money. That would be over $1 billion to housing. It would be about $800 million for public transit. It would be about $500 million annually for high-speed rail and about $265 million for other things. So there's a lot of money here. Now, we don't know exactly how it's going to work. Us and the California Transit Association have had a number of calls along with CalCOG to try to put some parameters around these funds, and I think we're pretty close to having a consensus. I think the key is that these monies would be used for public transit operating purposes that help reduce greenhouse gases. And the other part would be on the housing to support the plan that you adopted. Now, as you know from your planning process, public transit itself, a project itself, really doesn't do all that much for the reduction of greenhouse gases just because individual projects just can't move the needle. But as you also know, supporting housing and making sure that the region can grow in a form where people have access to transit is one of the very best strategies we have to reduce greenhouse gas reductions. And I think that's the most important connection that we see, that if we're going to take this significant step forward on our Plan Bay Area and to try to make opportunities available so that people can live next to transit, we got to support that transit with real money. Those include specific things such as more transit, more service, but also the cars. BART cars are needed. San Francisco Muni light rail trains are needed. More San Francisco Muni service is needed. If we bring all those people to San Francisco on BART, they need a place to go. And so this is really right in the wheelhouse of the plan that you all just went through and adopted. Again, we don't know how this is going to break. We don't have bill language. We can't give you a sense of the things we like and don't like. But I think if you look at it from a policy point of view and the opportunity for public transit and the opportunity to support with real money the effort that you took to adopt a plan consistent with SB 375, this is a unique opportunity that we're very hopeful can come to fruition in this budget year. Now, as you know, Governor Brown has a proposal for using cap and trade money for a single year this year in his budget proposal. This proposal by Senator Steinberg would seek to do it under a multi-year basis, which we like a lot more. I think a lot of you know that the politics here are a big deal. I'm sure the governor would like to do it annually because it gives him maximum leverage. I'm sure Senator Steinberg would like a legacy and do it on a multi-year basis because this is his last year. However, there's a new pro tem coming in who may want to crack at it themselves. So, look, there's a lot of background noise up there.
Usually is.
Yeah. I see a number of smirks on the table right there. So I think the most important thing was to inform you about this, to listen to you about any feedback we need to do as we try to work this subject. And I'll just close right there.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Commissioner Sperry?
Steve, has there been any feedback from the meeting that we had that Steinberg sat in on? I mean, he kind of left the invitation for us to get engaged, and so.
Yes, and I think some of you are going to have that chance next week because I think he's coming down here for a press event sometime in the week, and I think Chair Wirth will be participating in that. Maybe just to get a little deeper than Randy, and if you could go just to the front page of your memo, I think we can give you some sense of the state of play right now, even though it's early days, on each of these percentages. As Randy noted, there's a pie piece that's 40%, which is really half and half. It's half housing and half SCS. I think the very likely outcome is that we're going to be able to win on the point of getting that SCS money to us. We may have to put up with some sort of consternation from the Strategic Growth Council, but I hope it's not going to be too significant. The housing money is a different question because the state, I think, has had some success in allocating that kind of money, like Prop 1C, directly through the Housing and Community Development Department. And so that may be the way that the senator proceeds. What we've been discussing with him is the notion that the MPOs who've adopted these SCSs ought to have some participation in that process, number one, to make sure they go to places like our PDAs and not elsewhere. Number two, to make sure they consider readiness, right, so that they're not just putting it in a PDA that might be ready in 10 years when we know there's one that's ready in two. So we think there are some useful roles that we can play in the housing money, even if we're not allocating it directly. And as I think I mentioned to you at the commission meeting, we really aren't advancing the idea. Actually, my counterpart in Sacramento is, Mike McKeever, of using our TOA fund as a model for perhaps a statewide affordable housing fund around transit. And maybe peeling off a little bit of this housing money for that purpose so that most of it would be grants, but some of it might be invested in some kind of loan or revolving fund. On transit, the 30% for transit, what we've been discussing with the California Transit Association, and I think where we have basic agreement between the MPOs and the transit operators, is using the State Transit Assistance STA framework. It's a formula program that allocates the money that we're all very familiar with. It happens to be a very favorable formula for the Bay Area because it rewards our high ridership and our high level of tax investment in transit. And it comes in two buckets. One is population-based, one is revenue-based. And our history around here has been you have had a lot of discretion on the population-based money, and you've had fairly limited discretion on the revenue-based money. It goes straight to the operators. The trick we've been working on is trying to get a competitive element in both of those pots, because that's what Senator Steinberg and the environmental activists and a lot of other folks in Sacramento will insist on. They don't want a formula approach, right, where you just get the money no matter what. They're looking for greenhouse gas reductions. So we're trying to structure a form of competition. I think within the population-based money, that's okay because we're used to doing that on a competitive basis. We're also trying to structure some element of competition into the revenue-based money. And from our own selfish perspective, we're trying to make sure that whatever that transit piece of the pie ends up looking like, we can implement the vision that you adopted in December. Now, the numbers are so much larger in his proposal than ours that we should be able to make that work, but we want to make sure the crosswalk can happen effectively. On the high-speed rail money, I think, as I've mentioned to you, to the extent we can get the governor to engage in this long-term statutory framework, he's probably going to try to push that number up. They've publicly announced they'd like to see a third of the cap-and-trade money go to high-speed rail. So I think we'll need to be prepared for that negotiation. And the last one is a little bit of a mystery still, and I'll just leave it at that. So that's a little bit of the state of play on each one of these elements. But as Randy indicated, we've got, I think, two key variables here. One is the administration, and the other is the fact that we do have a new pro tem coming next year, and the extent to which he's willing to work with Senator Steinberg to do something this year that he'll have to live with next year instead of doing it himself is, I think, another question that we'll have to wait to see answered.
Yeah, go ahead. Steve, have we done any analysis on these higher projections that he's talking about? I mean, did that come from?
If you look in your memo, I would very much, whenever given the choice on revenue, go with the low number, and whenever given the choice on cost, go with the high number. That's just a smarter way, I think, to do business. So if I were you, I would be looking at these midpoint and low forecasts. Even so, as Randy indicated, we are still talking about dramatically higher amounts of money than we were talking about with you last year. So I think whatever the outcome is, a percentage-based framework makes sense, right? Because whatever it is in a given year, you're going to get your blank percent of that number. And I think over the long run, things will work out fine.
Anybody else? Staff, you're done on this one?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. That was an information item, so we'll move on to item 3B, AB 1532.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Hagerty.
SB 1151 also.
This item has three bills, actually, all related to pedestrian safety. We thought it would be easier to package them together. Basically, these bills would increase penalties associated with accidents involving vehicles and pedestrians, and also require that if a person is involved in an accident that affects a pedestrian, they need to wait and provide information at the scene of the accident, even if it appears that there's no injury. So that's AB 1532. AB 2398 substantially increases the fines for causing bodily injury or great bodily injury to $220. When you add the additional fees, that's going to be, you know, upwards of probably $800. And then it also provides that if you have a second accident within 3 years of the first one, you could lose your license for 6 months. So there's that penalty as well. And finally, SB 1151, it actually has been amended since we wrote the memo. Now it assesses an additional $35 fine on top of whatever the current base fine is for an accident that occurs in the vicinity of a school. So we recommend that we support all three of these. I think, you know, there's a lot of attention on this year, so it's an opportunity to pass some good legislation to help pedestrian safety.
Any thoughts? So I've been in some cities, and actually there's representatives sitting around this table where the city is somewhat of the wild, wild west, meaning people are just walking out in the middle of the street and crossing the street and riding across the street and going across the street when their light is clearly red and oncoming cars are green. Is there anything that puts a responsibility on the pedestrians too?
I think that's a fair question. These bills don't speak to that. You know, I'm not a legal expert. I don't know in the event of this really doesn't get into the liability, you know, and any kind of civil litigation that might result. I think this is just strictly the penalty that's assessed by the state. But, you know, I think pedestrians are supposed to use crosswalks. So, again, this doesn't speak to any liability that could result.
Okay. I'm happy they did that extra $35. You said $35?
Right.
If you hit somebody near a school?
That's on top of the baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bold move. Okay. Commissioner Halstead? Have a motion?
Second.
Is there any? There's a motion, a second. Is there any objection? The motion will pass with the appropriate roll call. I think this is a good place for you, Madam Chair, to talk about Bike to Work Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm ad-libbing. She told me to do it.
Exactly. No, speaking of bikes and pedestrians and people, I just really wanted to thank everyone for their participation yesterday in Bike to Work Day and recognize staff for their incredible role in supporting all the efforts around the region. You know, it is a great opportunity for the whole Bay Area to really kind of embrace and celebrate and try out riding a bike to transit, to work, to school. And I know, just wanted to recognize some of the commissioners that are here today for their involvement. I know several of us, including Commissioner Sparing and Commissioner Haggerty, myself, who actually volunteered at the energy station, but I also want to recognize the more bolder commissioners who actually got on bicycles. Commissioner Campos led a parade to down to City Hall, and Commissioner McKenzie spent all week on his bicycle. So I just want to know how
not
you...
Not all of the week.
That's what I said, all week going to work.
Week.
But anyway, you know, it's interesting from a statistical standpoint. There was about a 19% increase region-wide in participation. Contra Costa County, there was a 56% increase in riders. And I think we saw a lot of bike riders who use the bikes to ride from home to BART. And so it's a great, you know, last mile. And I'm impressed with especially ones that had to deal with some of the hills in some of our communities to get there. Anyway, Alameda County had a 24% increase and very excited about the arrival of Bike Share into the East Bay. And I know that Mayor Bates is always leading the charge with, again, excited about the Bike Share coming into Berkeley, which I read yesterday in the clips has, I think, the highest percentage of bike riders in the country. It's a huge statistic. But one couple in Marin County had said they were so eager to thank organizers and sponsors of the Golden Gate Energizer Station because they first participated in Bike to Work Day in 2013, and commuting now represents 40% of their total commuting time. So they asked the volunteers to pass on the message to the commission and to the volunteers. So here we are with that message. And I think that's really shows that we give people an opportunity to try it out. They'll continue. So again, thank you to everybody who participated. There's a lot of great press coverage, both in the newspapers as well as on TV and the radio. So it's a good day all around. And thank you again to the staff who worked so hard to make it happen and all the volunteers.
Well, Madam Chair, and also Chair Haggard, I just want to point out Leslie Laura, who's over here.
There's Leslie.
Yeah, she's the one who did everything. So I just wanted to just take this advantage and thank her. So.
Well, you know, and if I can add on to that, and thank you, and I know that one of the great parts of this is bringing youth into bicycles, and I know that the Spare the Air program that she helped organize, that we jointly sponsored, the youth conference last fall received a major award in recognition of reaching out to young people. So great day in getting people walking and biking. So thank you all.
Well. Thank you to everybody, and it should be noted that Commissioner Kinsey is still walking, so he's doing good. All right. I rode a bike for a week. I wouldn't even be here. All right. SB 1433.
Thank you. SB 1433 by Senator Hill repeals the January 1st, 2015 sunset date for transit operators to use design build. It also expands the authority to any local or regional agency responsible for constructing a transit project and eliminates minimum cost thresholds. Design build has been authorized for many years. It's been extended starting in 2000 with a number of bills. We think it makes sense to lift the sunset permanently and recommend a support position on the bill.
Sounds like something we would like. Moved by Luce, seconded by Hallstatt. Any objection to the motion? Motion will pass with the roll call that was announced earlier. Move to item 3D.
Thank you. AB 1724 by Assemblymember Frazier also deals with project delivery. This would expand the authority of regional agencies to use what's known as construction manager general contractor. Basically, this is a method where at the design phase, the project sponsor can hire a construction manager who helps assist with sort of constructability issues and can do pricing of different design options, and then that entity has the option to propose a construction contract. And if everybody agrees and there's an independent entity that agrees that it's a reasonable offer, they can be awarded the general contractor contract. If there is question or, you know, concern about their proposal, then the project sponsor can do an RFQ for the construction of the project, and they have the opportunity to bid, but they're not, you know, guaranteed. So it has been authorized for Caltrans, VTA, Samtrans, and Sandag for some time. 17 states have this option. So again, this is just broadening it to all regional agencies, and we think it makes some good sense and recommend we support it.
Thank you. Any questions? Motion?
Second.
Moved by Halstead, seconded by McKenzie. Any objection to the motion? Motion will pass without objection. SB 1184, Hancock. You might want to listen, Bates.
SB 1184 by Senator Hancock would require that BCDC, in collaboration with the JPC, the Coastal Conservancy, the Ocean Protection Council, and OPR, develop a regional resilience strategy by December 31st, 2018. And the goal is just to determine the best ways to protect residents from sea level rise. You know, this is really continuing work that BCDC is already doing and that we've been involved in as well, but providing more of a statutory authority for that and specific requirements of what they should be looking at. So they've asked for our support, and we believe it makes sense, so recommend support today.
Okay, any questions? Commissioner Kinsey.
No, not a question. I think it's an outstanding idea for sure. The question, if I have one, is whether or not it addresses the cost of this, or does that have to get handled through the traditional budget processes?
There's no specifics on how this would be funded, so I think that's a good question. I'm assuming it's probably going to go to the suspense in the Appropriations Committee, because there are some cost issues.
The thing is, these are multi-year deals. You don't want to have to go up and fight for it every single year if you're going to take this on and do it right. And there is a lot of outreach that needs to happen, because a lot of individual communities are already wrestling with these issues in their own kind of individualized ways. And so rounding them up and getting them all focused in the same direction is going to take some real work.
Mm-hmm. I do think, Commissioner, that BCDC strategy is to try to get the requirement in place, and then the next step is to put your cap out and say, now you got to pay for it.
Seen that?
Okay, so it was moved by Bates.
Second.
Seconded by Halstead. Is there any objection to the motion? Motion.
By who?
You.
I'm not on the committee.
Oh, I guess it wasn't.
Then.
Okay, are you on it?
Halstead, I'm on the
okay. Halstead, Kinsey. Any objection to the motion? Motion will pass as the roll call. 4A.
Thank you, Chair Hagerty. So this item, we have both a one-pager in your packet and then a very blue seven-page handout. I won't go through it line by line, but suffice to say the Obama administration has introduced a real bill, all 350 pages. It's a very ambitious proposal, very much in line with the January budget, where they provided a preview of their thinking about a long-term bill. It's a four-year proposal for $302 billion. Of that amount, $150 billion would come from the general fund, basically from repatriating revenue that otherwise is believed to be offshore, corporate tax loopholes. I would note that Senator Boxer has also announced that she will release her committee, the Environment and Public Works Committee, will release their proposal on Monday, and they're planning to mark up the bill the following Thursday. So that doesn't give folks too much time to review what's in that. But, you know, things are at least heating up in Washington as it relates to reauthorization. On the other hand, there hasn't been any discussion from the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee about when they'll release a bill. So I think, you know, we're going to have some discussion, but we don't expect too much action before the November election. I'll just maybe highlight a few things that are in the Obama proposal. There's a high-performing metropolitan planning organization proposal where an MPO would be able to apply to the secretary to be designated as a high-performing MPO. I think we would certainly apply for that designation, because if you get that, you are then entitled to a 50% increase in STP funding and a 50% increase in your Transportation Alternatives Program, TAP, funding. So, you know, we've been asking to have a greater share of STP for some time. As you may recall, in MAP 21, they shrunk the amount of STP that was going directly on the basis of population. So, you know, this is sort of a compromise that, you know, would certainly benefit our region. There are some changes also on the planning side, kind of related to the SB 1184 bill that you all just recommended we support. The bill would require that vulnerability and resilience assessments get incorporated into the regional transportation plan. So, you know, once again, I think we'd be a little bit ahead of the curve. We're already looking at that, but they're talking about requiring that both for state long-range plans and regional long-range plans to address climate change. On the freight side, the bill does include a significant policy and funding changes for freight. They do recommend establishment of a national freight program. It would receive $10 billion overall. Our recommendation was a minimum of $2 billion a year. They kind of ramp up over time. And it has both a competitive and a discretionary component. The formula and a competitive component. The formula is very complex. It has a number of different factors, but tonnage of freight volume carried by any mode and value are given the highest weight. So, you know, I think we think that makes some good sense, but there have been no runs to see exactly how much California would receive from that. Also, on the policy side, with respect to freight, they do require that the freight network and planning be broadened beyond highways. Under MAP 21, it really had a highway focus, so that's another good step. With respect to tolling, you've probably seen one of the bigger policy changes recommended in the bill is to allow tolling on the interstate for reconstruction of roadways. So MAP 21 allowed tolling on the national highway system, but not the interstate, so this is taking it one step further. We note that the trucking industry has already announced that they oppose that provision. On the transit side, where really the biggest funding boosts occur, there's a huge increase in state of good repair. Would grow from $2.1 billion this year to an average of $5.8 billion, so really an emphasis on maintaining the system we already have, plus an increase in capital investment grants, the New Starts program. Let's see. On the highway side, there's also a big emphasis on state of good repair program. A new program is proposed, the Critical Immediate Investment Program. I guess we would call it CIP. It's a $13 billion program over 4 years, and it starts out with a larger infusion up front to really, you know, take care of those neglected deferred maintenance, and is focused on safety, bridge work, and just general state of good repair, and states would have some flexibility on how to spend that money. There's some provisions related to project streamlining that seem like they're good ideas. And then on the discretionary kind of Tiger side, there's continued funding of Tiger at about $1.2 billion level, so doubling of Tiger. They remove minimum project size, which we don't think is such a good idea. So, you know, right now, there's a minimum of $10 million for a project. They would remove it altogether, so we think that could be a little bit unwise. They do provide that projects requesting a smaller federal share would receive priority, which we think is a good idea. Then they create a new discretionary program. It's not really clear why you would want to have two national discretionary programs, but the new one is called FAST. It's multimodal. It's $500 million would be out of the FTA side, $500 million from FHWA. And that program does have a strong minimum required. It's a $50 million minimum for project size. And there's a number of different factors, but very broad project eligibility, similar to Tiger. So that's really a quick, relatively quick snapshot of the administration's proposal. It'd be interesting to see what parallels there are with the Senate bill next week. And happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. No questions, then we will move to Mr. Bolger's report. Do you want to say anything about it or just leave it to the perusal of the committee?
It is there, and it's almost essentially the same what you just heard. I think the key is that right now, in fact, next week, we're going to see the Senate hopefully act. We've been waiting for a long time. We have the administration really for the first time in their entire time in Washington giving us a detailed proposal. You know, it's the first administration that had not done so in the history of the country, so it's kind of amazing. But look, I think this is an ambitious proposal by the administration. We like a lot of it, but you know, when you look at this Congress, I think it's not very optimistic that they're going to be able to take a step like this. Likely what we're going to see with this election coming on is the Republicans don't want to have nothing happen. I think that this highway bill is going to matter a great deal to them by the time election time comes. A lot of red states are out there saying they've run out of money and they don't want to stop these contracts in the summertime. So what's likely to take place is a kick the can down the road, some sort of a money to keep it going for some period of time. But I do think you're seeing the outlines of at least a hopeful future. Perhaps Congress can take this up in a meaningful way after the election is over.
Questions?
A true optimist, Mr. Chair.
All right, we're adjourned. Thank you.
No, Mr. Chair, public comment, other business?
Go ahead.
If I might. I think it's just a moment of pause and reflection, actually. Last week, Congressman Jim Oberstar passed away, and I just wanted to acknowledge that we in the Bay Area and the nation as a whole really benefited from his commitment to transportation, from aviation to cycling, to figuring out how to work with opposing ideologies to get things done. And, you know, he's not our congressman, but he really was our congressman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well said.
Okay. 79. We're adjourned.
Probably.